I'd like to call this meeting to order of the Overton Power District in the Mesquite office, August 21st at 3 p.m. Is there any public comments? Do I hear a motion for acceptance of the agenda?
Second.
Well, we need a motion first.
Yeah.
I'll make a motion.
Bob makes a motion and Dale seconds it. All in favor?
Good.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, do I hear a motion for approval of minutes of the previous meeting held June 19th, 2024?
I move we accept the minutes from.
Do I hear a second?
I'll second that.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the meeting minutes from June 19th. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Chair's report. I have a couple of things. First of all, I want to make sure that everybody has seen the progress and seeing from our readers and Enjoy Your Retirement, Corey, which, oh heck, we have time because Chad's not here yet, so we'll read it. When I read that Corey Daly had retired, I want everyone to know that all the electric boxes in Mesquite that have been wrapped with colorful art is due to Corey getting the approval from General Manager Mendez Cooper. Then he worked with Christine Picior and I while we were on the Mesquite Public Arts Commission. Thanks to Corey, who gave us the measurements and provided an electrician to be present during the entire time that Clark County Printing installed the wraps on each of the 9 or 10 boxes. Corey was totally accommodating to all our needs. He was great to work with. Be sure to think of him every time you pass one of these artistic electric boxes. Enjoy your retirement, Corey, and thanks for making our project possible. Liz, I'm going to say Eddie, and Christine Picior. And I just thought that was
very nice.
Was really nice that, that they took the time to say something.
Yeah.
And then I have two things. One was I hope that you'll all read the newspaper for the fire that was at the inverter at the Gemini plant. I know we're all aware of different conditions that happen when you're at solar plants and battery storage and all those different things. But this was a good example for us that the fire department, they sent out the station from Vegas, they sent them out and they started dumping water. It's a no-no. There is a special chemical in our fire district and Mesquite Fire District. Both have worked together, learned how to use it, and are prepared for those kind of things because of all the solar fields. Our fire district showed up on location and were able to immediately take care of the fire because we have the F500 in stock that was what you're supposed to use on those fires because it sucks the oxygen out and the fire goes out. So if you can all take the time to read that little article, it just kind of explains to you and gives anybody that doesn't have an understanding of that a better understanding of it. Another thing was that came up was a misconception during elections again that our only lines we have are the two lines coming from Vegas. Those are the only lines that we own. We also have verbal agreements with the Southern Utah Transmission Group and with Lincoln County that if we have outages or emergencies, we can draw power from them as they can draw power from us. It's a mutual agreement so that we can all help each other if we need to come from this side of town. So I want to be sure people were aware of that. That was all of those. And then we have a couple of thank you notes for scholarships from Sage Whitney. Bryn?
Oh, Andrews? Bryn Andrus.
Oh, that's close. Bryn Andrus.
That's Jason Andrus' daughter.
Yeah, they were so nice after we went to the night they handed out the scholarships and made me feel great. She came up afterwards and gave me a hug and wanted to take a picture with me. And it was just nice to know that somebody thought that much of it. So then we have a letter from Clark County School District, the Office of the Board of School Trustees. Dear ladies and gentlemen at Overton Power District Number 5, on behalf of the Clark County School District Board of Trustees, I would like to thank you for your contributions of $1,405.33 for the Roundup for Education program. Your generous gift will enhance the educational opportunities for students at Moapa Valley High School. Excuse me, the members of the board recognize the importance of such contributions and greatly appreciate your continued support of the district and its programs. Hopefully we get one for Virgin Valley too.
Do you want to make a comment on that, Coop, so we don't get gigged on that?
Yeah, Scott and Christy talked to me. They issued the check to Virgin Valley last year and it hasn't been cashed yet. Christy, I believe it was Christy, told me that you had reached out and you haven't heard back from them.
Correct.
Yet. Yeah. So I don't, you know, I know that there's a fear. We've never got a letter like this before. There's a fear that the school district is going to take that money, and I don't know if they're holding it because of that. But Christy's been in communication with them, and we'll see what's going on, and hopefully get things straightened out.
I wouldn't mind calling if we need to. Okay, then we come to happy times. Well, that's her note that says I have to give it back to her. Mr. Dale Rust, would you please stand up?
It's not that easy.
Come on over here. Okay, Mr. Rust is his first year, and it's Morris Dale Rust. I didn't know that.
I didn't either for many years.
Many? That he has just gotten his board, finished his board leadership program, which is the first series of 5 classes, right, that he has
no,
to take?
No, second.
Second?
Yeah, he's done his 10.
Well, oh yeah, it's BN. You are awesome, dude. There he is. He's been a wonderful addition to this board.
Let me get my mic, please.
No, I don't lie. I am very honest. That is the truth.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Come on, here. And that took care of that one. You have to give that back to Becky, it says so.
You can hold it, you just can't keep it.
You can keep the pin on the back.
There's the note. You can have it. So that's that. I think that was everything. Byron.
I don't have anything at this time unless anyone has questions for Carol.
Anybody? Manager's reports.
First, we'll go with admin, Scott.
All right.
I was going to switch you around, but I just couldn't.
Not this time?
So,
no. Next time?
Next time, be ready.
I like getting it over with. That's going to be a hard report to follow, Judy. Good job.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, this is the cybersecurity report for August. Our cybersecurity training, we're doing really well, 98% in June. 96% in July. We learned about two-factor authentication, stuff like that. We did social engineering as a powerful tool, and be cautious of public Wi-Fi networks. And it seems to be paying off. Our last 3 months, we had 0 people click on our phishing campaigns, so we are happy about that. 36,000 emails, about 8% of that is spam that we receive in a given month. Here's the firewall blocks by country. Russian Federation, China, Bulgaria, round out the top 3. Server system uptime, we're at 100%. Oh. Data backup and restoration. We are at 100%. We have been making some changes to this, so you'll see a lot of the incremental backups between the dates are not at 100%, but that's because they are incremental. We do have 100% data backup with full backups each month. The EISAC, we're continuing to follow. I've highlighted a couple interesting ones I wanted to go over because, while cybersecurity, is, you know, very interesting. There's like all of the security we have to think about. And so I highlighted these two emails because it gives you a picture of what's possible out there. So the bottom left, the contract vegetation management crew came under gunfire from a nearby property owner. The crew was working on transmission in a remote area outside of company service territory. Three crew members were injured. Law enforcement responded, and after exchanging gunfire with the suspect, took him into custody. And the other one I wanted to kind of highlight is station operators were completing their rounds at the station when they noticed that there was a drone flying low around over the station discharge nest. It continued to fly around the station and at one point followed the operator before flying off. So there's all kinds of different issues out there we got to keep in mind. This highlights some of those security issues. And, you know, in 2025, when we come to you guys for different security projects, we are keeping some of these in our mind, and we're following some of the trends that are happening out there. And that's my report. Any questions?
Okay, thank you, Scott.
Yep.
Randall?
I have a question.
Okay, yeah. We do have some questions.
It doesn't really pertain to this other than the fact, can you shoot a drone?
When you say can we, is it legal or are we skilled enough?
or would the substation crew have a gun on them to shoot it? I mean, there's all kinds of things there.
Don't answer that.
we were actually in the backyard in the pool when a drone came over, which you think is, it turns out the neighbor, he had ready to sell the house, and we were getting video, but it's a little unnerving to have that privacy taken away.
I can tell you that the events that you go to, rodeos, football games, you see drones, and all those, sometimes even getting close to the participants, and it's crazy.
I just want to make a comment on what you were just doing, because most people, when they think of cybersecurity, what's the first thing, well, you guys don't count, but what's the first thing you think of? You think of the scams, you think of the phishing. People don't really think a lot past that. And I just had an interesting thing happen yesterday that I've never gotten any letters that said, like, my stuff was sold, you know, was stolen. And we got a letter yesterday that said that through Ticketmaster, which I should have known better, I never bought anything through Ticketmaster, that my information was stolen. So last night, I go home and Sugar goes, asked me, what was it, did you not pay for the AAA? And I said, well, the AAA's not even due yet. And he said, yeah, it is. He said, I said, well, just forward the email over to me and let me see it. And immediately you could see, you know, it started out with the little AAA emblem, but then, like, you didn't respond to them, you responded to this series of numbers and letters and things. And I told him, I said, well, that's okay. And about 10 minutes later, it happened again. He says, Costco says our payment was declined. And I'm like, Costco's not even due. It's once a year, and it's not even that time. He said, no, it says your monthly payment is due. And I said, okay, send me that one. Same thing. So I think all the time we have to think of all the different ways that cybersecurity helps us, not just here but in our daily lives, but especially here, because we are protecting our customers' information.
And really there's so much to it that I can't talk about in a public meeting,
yeah.
So I really tried to highlight some of the very highest level things. I mean,
that you can.
We can have discussions outside of this, but not in a public meeting about how it's all tied together.
And that's it, though. People just don't understand how much it is out there and how much is involved. So, like you say, can't discuss it in a public meeting because then you lose that protection.
Yeah.
So that's all I wanted to say. It happens.
Very important stuff. Randall?
I'm up.
You're up.
I'm ready. Wasatch is coming back on the ring bus. We're going to be able to finish up this winter. They'll be coming back in September and October and prepare for us moving over to the RG number 2 line. Tortoise to Gila 138 line, we have a pre-bid meeting set up for September 17th. At that meeting, we'll be bidding out 5 projects, and we've invited all the contractors to come to one meeting, and then we'll do all day, we'll do a drive-through of all the different projects we have going on. Raptor Substation, the first slide. So Raptor Substation, we're working on the off-site improvements at this time, doing the approaches, the curb, and the valley gutter. And we have to extend the water line, which will be coming up the next few weeks. Long Drive switch, our next slide. So we're finishing up the walls at Long Drive. This is the exterior of the roadside, kind of driving up there. Next slide. This is the interior, and that will be finished up towards the end of this month. We'll be complete there. We have started some other foundation work inside the sub, the switch yard.
How tall is that equipment going to be? Like, I know there's some concerns about all that.
Yeah, it'll be 40, 50 feet.
Some good size stuff.
It'll be as high as those lines going across it now.
Yeah, it's...
That's what it is?
Or higher.
It's beautiful from a utility
standpoint. Yes, it is.
Let's see.
It's also beautiful in the summer when you want an air conditioner, too.
The Escape Project, they started grading out there for their substation, and that is currently on schedule to be online in June of 2025. We've had some interesting conversations with a few developers coming in the Moapa area. They're looking at loads anywhere from 18 to 400 megawatts. Right now we have an NDA agreement, so we really can't discuss the parameters. Perhaps if you guys have an executive session, Menace and Lisa could answer some questions for you guys if you had any. I believe that, personally, I believe one of those projects is going to go in, and they're looking at a 3-year build-out. Also, Bob, you wanted a report on TDS, and what we've done is we've sent them a letter, a breach of contract letter, where they haven't been performing based on the agreement that we had with them. We've given them 30 days to remove their facilities on the project we've already taken our overhead underground. And that 30 days will be up this week. And at that point, we will let them know that we'll be taking down their facilities and charging them for that labor. And then we'll have to discuss going back to a new agreement with them. So that's all we
need. Are they still in business?
TDS, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
When that happens, then will those poles come out? Or?
Yes, yeah. They're the only thing holding up some of those projects finishing up is their lines on our poles.
Excellent. Thank you.
Yeah.
And I've been involved in that, approved the letters, all that, making sure that we abide every step of the contract, which we have. We are in the right in this case, and they are acting appropriately. All right, we are.
That concludes my report. If you have any questions.
Thank you.
You bet.
Okay, Kyle?
All right, for line operations for June and July, we'll start off with some measurables. So for service installations for June, we only had 29 residential installations, no commercial. And then for July, we had 30 residential and 4 commercial. So kind of slower for those 2 months, but I think it goes with the time of the year, from what I see. For outages, for June planned outages, we had 12. Unplanned, we had 5. In July, we had 9 planned and 10 unplanned. You'll see in the next few slides, monsoon season showed up, and we had some work, extra work to do because of those storms that blew through. So, and for affected customers, we're kind of on average for what we have this time of the year. For June, we had 1,400-ish customers, and then July, we had 2,152 customers. In June, we had 3,784 hours, and then July, 369 hours. Those hours in June were quite high because it was a particular spot where it took out a lot of customers. It was the switch down there by the rec center that got hit by that. And you know, that resulted in a lot of customers being out for a longer extended amount of time. So, That's why that one was higher. And then for the first four or five slides here, we have mostly just storm-caused outages. On the left here, this was a Sunday afternoon. In fact, both these right here are on the same day. Warm Springs and the reservation on the right. These four men here worked hard this Sunday. It was in, I believe, July, one of the hottest days of the year we've had to. The first one on the left was a tree limb that broke, a big cottonwood tree. We've been trimming on it, been trying to get the customer to let us take it down, clear to the ground, but they just would not let it go. So that took that pole clear to the ground and caused 5 or 6 hours worth of work for those gentlemen. And they got that wrapped up, got home for a short break, and then the monsoon rolled in into that reservation area, and it focused all that wind and rain on that area. And ended up breaking two poles and blew over a third pole. And these poor guys got called out at like 9 o'clock that night, and they worked through the night getting that restored. So they worked very hard. And
were they consecutive poles, those three, or were they?
They were not. There was two in a row that were that one, and then one right down the road was leaned over, but broke poles on the reservation in different areas. So not only did they have to replace this one, but then they had to mobilize down the road and go back to work on another one. So what's interesting, though, is like you can see that right there, the light's on. So that doesn't happen very often. Poles broke on the ground like that. You can see that one phase is on top of that portion of the pole, but it blinked the power, but the power stayed on. So we're very grateful that the reservation cop was able to, he was nearby and saw this all happen, but he was able to secure the area for us. So we were super grateful for him to, because it takes us a minute to get there. So trying to keep personnel and customers safe was we were very happy for him to be there for us. Next, we had another monsoon that came through in the Mesa area by the Carpelgian exit. Put all its focus on that line right in there. You can see it created a nice little pond right around the pole that had broke here. These gentlemen on the left are just putting a splint on it to secure it so we can come back in a few days, and they end up changing five poles on that job there. So a lot of work there. And then the next storm that rolled through after that, we just kind of monitor where those storms put their focus on, and just because the power doesn't go out that night, we still send guys out to patrol that area. This is one here. It was between Riverside and Bunkerville. We sent guys out the next morning after the storm and was able to find that broke arm there. You can see where the red arrow is kind of pointing. It's not supposed to be split apart like that. Luckily, it didn't cause no power outage, and we were able to get it fixed before it did. You know, if had we not patrolled the line, we definitely could have had an outage eventually. So, and then I picked out a big project in each valley just kind of talk on today. In Watt Valley, the crew's been working on wrecking out this aquatics line. It used to be Lasco. It's now aquatics. We've done some reconfiguration up there and got a new line feeding around behind and to the Las Vegas pit, and now we feed aquatics off that. And we were tasked with wrecking out this line here. It's a 13 poles long, three-phase line. But we took the opportunity to do a little simulation. We de-energized it, but we have a lot of young apprentices that need time in the air, and we were able to safely de-energize that, but let them work like it's energized and put them through some tasks on that. And it was an outstanding project. Get them a lot of training hours on that. And a lot of good lessons learned there. It was very good. Mesquite, the engineering team found this pole here closest to us on this 138 kV structure that was rotten. So just part of our process, when we find those rotten poles, we get out there and we get them changed. And this was between the Gila substation and here. The Mesquite were able to do it de-energized, and the Mesquite team got that knocked out pretty good for us. And then lastly, safety meeting. The topic for June was MSDS, Workers' Right to Know. We had a great attendance. We have 57 attendees that day, which is dang near everybody at Overton Power. We're very happy. And then July, fall protection and climbing equipment inspection, which is ladder safety is a lot of it, but then also the line side. We go into our climbing equipment and stuff, and we had 45 attendees there. And I just want to note, our safety meeting day consists of a meeting in Overton early in the morning. We have the same presentation later on that afternoon here in this meeting, or in this room, here in Mesquite, and we make that able so that everybody at the company can attend. It's, you know, if you have conflicts with scheduling, you're still able to attend here in Mesquite. And we also have CSRs that, quite honestly, you can't shut down the entire office to send them to Overton to safety meetings. So the safety committee has come up with that design there, and it's worked out very well for everybody. We have very good attendance every month because of that. So that is my report, unless anybody has any questions.
Yeah, quick question for you. You said that that one outage is caused by a big tree falling on a
tree
power.
Yeah.
And the property owners didn't want to have that tree trimmed. Is there, like, I know that gets to be...
It's very sticky.
Sticky, and kind of probably gray area, too.
Yeah.
But who's, like, is there, do they have some liability for that? Or, like, can you force them to, like, hey, we got to cut this tree down and make them, or...
You know, the only time we would ever force that is if we thought the line was in imminent danger. Otherwise, we just try to do the best we can working with the customer. In this case, you know, the contractor had been whittling away on that tree trying to keep it at bay, and the windstorm just broke it off. But if they would have, you know, if it would have been further out into the line or something like that, they would have notified us that it was an imminent hazard. We would talk to the homeowner, and if we needed to, get Byron involved. So just depends on the situation.
Okay, thank you.
Anything else?
Thanks, Kyle. Okay, Kevin.
Okay.
Sub-ops.
For a while now, I've been talking about a security enhancement that we've been doing at our substations, and we've got one online now, and it's pretty cool. It's a radar system that tracks wherever you go, and a camera follows. And I don't want to touch too much on it because it is substation security, and I don't want to give too much away, but this guy right here drove into there and set the alarm off first thing this morning. So that's me. I was trying to sneak in underneath the radar and not be caught. It caught me. But the cool thing about it is it tracks on the right hand side. You can see all those tracks, and you can see cars and then the person. So it'll track it. It'll tell you whether it's a car or a person, but it follows. Basically, that's the tracks that it followed with the camera and caught video of all of that. So pretty neat system. Works well. It set the alarm off as soon as I cross through that threshold. So
that's a good picture.
Well, that's not even a good picture.
Well, that's not.
No, the good picture, I pull it off of the NVR, but this was just one I just pulled off of the system itself. But yeah, that camera is amazing. It's got a laser focus, so you hit the, wherever you hit, it's got an X on there. Wherever you hit on that X, it'll focus right into that, and it's just crystal clear just as soon as pulls it over. It's crystal clear, so it's neat. The next thing I wanted to talk about, is there any questions on that? Anything I can answer?
We have the ability to talk. You know, we see somebody out there the weekend. You're being videotaped. Police are on the way.
We do with our system now. It's just we don't have a big loudspeaker, and it's such a huge area, you wouldn't be able to. We'd have to get some equipment set up. But yeah, we can.
But they're in the auto alarm.
Yeah, there's an audio alarm.
But we don't say, Kevin, we see you tripping the.
Yeah, we actually have an alarm and lights that go off to, you know, try and.
But we do have that capability.
Slow them enough until the police get there.
Yeah. So the next thing I want to talk about was the fiber link between Reed Gardner and Tortoise Substation is complete. And what that fiber link does is it gives us a differential, a line differential between Tortoise and Reed Gardner. So anybody want to ask, what's a line differential between Tortoise and Reed Gardner?
What is a line differential?
Oh, okay, good. I'm glad you asked. So up here, let's say the top one is Reed Gardner line number one, and the bottom one's Reed Gardner line number two. And the communications, the line different, I'm going to stand up here because it's going to be easier for me to do it up here. And
So, sorry, I pulled this off the internet real quick. I didn't have a chance to get a good. But say, this is a bus at Reed Gardner, and this is the bus at Tortoise. And what we have is a differential relay. So all of the current coming in on, actually all of the current leaving Reed Gardner has to equal the current coming into Tortoise. And if it doesn't, it trips. It'll trip here. And then this communication link, the fiber between the two substations, if it sees something it doesn't like, it'll open up both sides because we are running in parallel. So you got two lines running in parallel between the two substations. So we don't want to have something happen here and that breaker open and this one not, because it'll come back and it'll trip the whole system out. So it's a fail-safe. So with that fiber between the two, if there's something happens here, it immediately opens up here and lets the power flow through our second line so we don't get interrupted in our service. So that's why it's important for that fiber link. And the line differential just says whatever's going out of Reed Gardner has to come in at Tortoise. And if it's not, it opens up both those breakers. So,
fabulous.
Are there line losses that are looked at? You say it has to be the same.
Yeah, it takes that into calculation. You know, the computers in these relays, they set them all up for line impedance, and they've got all kinds of those calculations are set in there. So. They're pretty accurate. And the reason I bring this up and the reason it's important is because from Reed Gardner all the way to Mesquite, we're going to have parallel lines running eventually. And this is the setup that we've got on all of those lines. So we have a ring bus with lines between those ring buses at each point. And if something happens on one of those lines, it'll open up on both sides and continue our service. So we'll never have one cause of outage of the other. So we'll always have service as long as both lines are, or one line is still good. So that's why this is important to know. We'll have that communications link all the way back to Mesquite from basically Reed Gardner.
So. Good job, Kevin.
People smarter than me did it. the next thing I wanted, oh, I'm going the wrong way. The next thing is we've had a concrete contractor been doing a lot of work for us. And this cage you see on the left-hand side is a transformer pad. And there's some finished work on the right. These guys do a fantastic job. They're fast. They do a really good job on this. They had to do it in two pours. They did the inside, and then they do the outside wall around. And this is a containment pad. So now you can see how it's finished. It's got an oil containment so that if the oil spills out, it's not an environmental hazard. So it's contained in there, and we can clean it up easily. And that should contain all the oil for that transformer in that pad. So it's quite a big...
Is that the crew out of that did Tortoise, all the pores up there?
Mm-hmm. Yep, the E&M. They did a really good job. This is the inside of Long Drive. On the right-hand side, you can see there's another pad there for a building. They're starting that one. That was yesterday. I think they got it formed up today, but I'm not sure. I didn't go back today when it formed.
We went through there and it was formed up.
So we've got two transformer. They've done two transformer pads for us, and this is the second building pad. And then we've got four breaker pads that they're doing. And so this job, I'll have to do a continuation next week because this was yesterday. We had taken the jumpers down from the high side, pulled all of the wires out of this breaker. This breaker is being replaced with a new breaker. The pad is the wrong size for the new breaker, and so we have to tear the pad out and replace it. But this is our crew working on removing that breaker, and then... This is the contractor building. That's the way it was tonight when I left up there. So they're ready to pour for tomorrow. They'll be here back in the morning to pour that. And it'll be ready for a breaker in a couple of days. I plan on putting that breaker back in next week, the new one. This is the breaker on the left is the old one that they've pulled out. And you can see there's a big air tank in there. And it's got a motor and a compressor and an air tank. It runs on 200 PSI.
of air pressure. And so there's a lot of maintenance involved in that. The that black, you see the gold valve with the black on top of it? That is a pilot valve, and that's what actuates that. Those things leak. I'd say they, during their sub-inspection, they rebuild one of those probably every month. They're a lot of maintenance. The hoses burst. We've had a couple of hoses burst, and it leaks all of its air out, and the compressor just runs and runs. And we change the oil in those compressors every year. We just do a lot of maintenance on these breakers. We've had them stick and have to manually engage them back and forth to get them to work. So the one on the right is a new breaker style, and it uses an electric motor and winds up a spring, and that's what energy actually opens the breaker and closes the breaker is a spring. So a spring wound breaker.
Is that like the newer, better technology?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The one on the right, if power's out, you can't get the motor to charge, there's a handle, you go, and it's done. It's ready to close. It'll open without the motor, but you have to wind it back up to get it to close. The one on the left uses a big piston that it pushes that air and forces it, and then there's a spring that'll release it to open it. I'm trying to see if I can reduce our maintenance on these and reliability by changing out one every couple of years. And so
how many do we have?
I think we have 10 or 11 left on the system.
And one of them a month?
A year or every couple of years. Months. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and this one will go into, basically it'll be a spare in case one of the other ones fail. We have a spare now for it that we just pull off the base and put it back on. So, anyway.
If you don't keep it for a spare, is most of this old equipment scrap, or is there a market for it?
There's not much of a market for it.
Like you showed us a breaker or something you were
the
taking out.
A recloser.
It's just...
Yeah, that recloser scrap that we took out was, I would say, almost 40 years old.
Oh.
This one is 30 years old. This breaker is 30 years old. Rich probably helped put that in, didn't you, Rich?
That was a good one, too.
That Painted Hills, that was probably top of the line back then.
Oil rush.
Those oils are...
Yeah.
We've got four of those, three of those still at Tortoise, and I've got the three sitting there that we can't pull them out until we get that new line built to put them in. So they're coming out, too. So.
Are you looking for some yard art?
Hey, we've got some bushings that are like 15 foot tall. You could coming out of big transformers.
Christmas lights.
Yeah, put a little light on top of it.
Get some put in your brain.
That's my report. Unless you've got questions for me.
You. Just a little side story. A few years ago, we had an outage. It was a good sized outage, and I went to Tortoise Substation to operate the breaker. They couldn't get it to operate online, and so I pulled up there and looked at it. It was jammed, and I couldn't get it to operate at all. And I called Kevin and said, "What do you want me to do with this?" He says, "Well, tap the actuator with a wrench or hammer." And I said, "I'm really not excited about being in the cabinet when that thing operates." He says, "Well, just get your stick. You know, you have like a shotgun or a hot stick." And he says, "Tap it with that." And I sat there and beat on that for about 5 minutes, and it still never worked. So I'm personally happy to see those things going. So.
Yeah, that one was the first one we replaced.
So I have just a few things to report on. First of all, I wanted to let you know that the Nevada Rural Electric and NV Energy had a meeting, and we met with Doug Cannon from NV Energy with all of the CEOs from NREA. And we talked about NV Energy's proposal to go to the EDAM. And I gave you some information on the EDAM at our last meeting, so we asked some questions of NV Energy. They were curious about why we were so concerned about them going to the E-Dam, and when we got to the part where we were talking about costs, I asked them, you know, there's a, when you went to the EIM, you passed on the costs of that program to all of your customers, including us. How would you do the E-Dam? And they said, well, you guys are probably going to see some increase in costs from this too. So they planned on passing those along, and we still don't have any answers as to how expensive that will be. But they did tell us that costs will be coming, and they're working on that, and it's going to be a few years down the road before they actually are able to make that transition and even calculate what the costs will be. They were very good to share information with us, and I really appreciated the meeting with them. And then, as Randall mentioned, we've had some inquiries for some pretty big projects. Randall and I went to a meeting in Las Vegas. We met with a developer, and we met with Marilyn Kirkpatrick, and went through some of these things. There are some pretty big loads, as Randall articulated. And so at that meeting, I told the commissioner that I needed to meet with NV Energy about these loads to make sure that we could serve them. And she wanted to hold the meetings at her office so she could be involved. So a couple of weeks ago, I met with Doug Cannon again and with the commissioner. We talked about these big loads and if NV Energy had the capability of letting us move power through their system to feed these larger loads. We also talked about maybe some projects in the future, increased transmission lines, increased transmission access. And I also mentioned to them that if we do get some larger loads in, that come online, that it would be difficult to purchase all of that and move it through their system, which they agreed. And I told them that we would look at probably some additional solar facilities, maybe some battery storage, and it would have to include probably some natural gas generation, which they agreed and said when we get to that point that they would like to explore maybe working together to do a project if it was needed there. So we had a very good discussion, and I appreciated NV Energy being real workable and understanding of where we're at. And you know, they're just like us. They said we don't want to turn anybody away because there's not enough power. We want to do everything we can to get it in there. Very good conversation, very positive. So just want to let you know that we've had those discussions and that we'll continue to meet and discuss those things. I just wanted to let you know our summer loads. I believe that our summer peak is probably in, Kevin. What do you think?
I
hope so, yeah, too. So in 2023, our summer peak was 116.02 megawatts. This year, our summer peak was 124.76 megawatts. We exceeded 116.02 9 times during the summer. So it wasn't a one-day thing. It was a very, very hot summer. Interestingly enough, I went back and I looked at our transmission planning study that our consulting engineers did back in 2019, and I wanted to see what their prediction was for 2024. And they have a range of estimates. They have an estimate if there's economic problems. They have an estimate if there's extreme weather. You know, they just have like four or five scenarios. And I looked at, you know, what was their scenario if we had weather and continued growth, and their estimate was 125 megawatts. So they estimated that pretty darn close. And I questioned them on that when they did that. Our customer growth was going, but our megawatts were not going up. And so I really quizzed them on that, and they assured me that they had good numbers, and they proved that. They did a great job. In 2023, we purchased in July over 3,700,000 kilowatt hours. In July of 2024, we purchased more than 59 million kilowatt hours. That's the highest we've ever purchased in a month by 6 million kilowatt hours.
That would push us out of our
There will probably be a bandwidth charge associated with this. Again, I went back to the power requirement study and looked at, you know, they didn't have it broken out by month, but they had it broken out by year. And we are on pace to match their estimate of selling 487 million kilowatt hours during this year. So we're right on target with their estimate there. And I found that pretty interesting that they had that dialed in so well. So they did a good job, Randall. Thank you for shepherding that. And that's my report, unless you have some questions for me. Okay, Melissa?
I just have two quick updates. We have had, since our last meeting, two employees that have retired. We had one from our line crew, or our management staff on the line operations, and then one from our billing department. And then we have two additional employees that we anticipate retiring by the end of this year. So we have both the line crew and the billing department. We had plans in place for their replacements, and that has all taken care of. And then the accounting department employee that is retiring before the end of the year, we also have succession planning in place for her. And so all of those are working out really well, and you'll get to hear one of those do a presentation soon. So the other thing that I wanted to update you guys on was Mendes, Jack, and I attended the NREA strategic planning session. That was facilitated by CFC, and it was hosted in Pahrump by Valley Electric. We had some really thought-provoking discussions. It was, as we worked through the SWOT analysis on a statewide basis, certainly there's threats to our industry and to our state. But then listening to all of the strengths and especially the opportunities, you leave there feeling empowered. Like, we have wonderful leadership in our state. We have wonderful brain power when everybody gets into a room and starts working against those weaknesses or threats. And so I felt like it was a very enjoyable trip. We left with a lot of work. I don't know that many people feel that they've attended something that was inspiring and thought-provoking in Pahrump, Nevada, but I feel like we did. So we thank Valley for hosting that, and look forward to keep continuing to work on that plan with NREA. And that's all I have for tonight.
Any questions for Melissa? If not, Jonathan, let's go through the financial report.
Okay.
You want to pass that down to Jonathan?
All right, we'll begin with our statement of operations. So on line one, our operating revenues for the month of July, over on the far right column B, we had a total operating revenue of $5,259,000. On line three, we have a total cost of purchase power of $2,956,000. Which contributed to our total cost of electric service on line 20 of $4,150,000. Line 22, we received interest on our investments in the amount of $104,000, which contributed to our total line 29 margins of $1,213,000. So if you look at our year-to-date column, line B, on our total margins, year-to-date we have $5,563,000, which is roughly, if you look at the next column to the left, from our year-to-date margins for 2023, is roughly $800,000 more than we were in the prior year. Our balance sheet will start on the asset side, line three. Our total utility plant value closed at $175,875,000. Assets also include our line eight investments in associated organizations and patronage capital, our line 15 cash, line 18 temporary investments, line 23 materials and supplies, and these all contribute to our total asset value on line 29. Of $180,837,000. Then our liability side, beginning on line 36, our total margins and equities are valued at $121,037,000. Our other liabilities also include our line 40 long-term debt, line 48 our accounts payable, line 56 other deferred credits, which leaves us a total of our line 57 total liabilities of $108,837,000. So at the top here, these are the totals in our checking account. Our cash balance closed for July with the amount of $4,740,000. And down towards the bottom, our investments. The Morton account closed with a value of $32,998,000. And we received an average of 4.6% return in that account. And then our Goldman Sachs account closed with a value of $612,000 with an average rate of return of 5.21. Here's the detail for our assets in our Morton account by security type in the pie chart and by security duration in the bar graph. And these first two columns on the left are short-term investments, 0 to 3 months and for the first column of $11 million, and then 3 to 6 months for the second column of around $5 million. And we've been planning this for a long time, but we anticipate using a large portion of those assets from these accounts over the course of the next 6 months to fund our engineering and substation projects. So here's a micro version of our Morton assets. If you, down here at the bottom right here, this is again our average rate of return in these accounts, 4.6%. And if we start right here towards the top, starting with this asset right here, if you can read that, but the 4% rate of return right there, all the way down to the bottom. So we have 4%, 5%, 6%, all the way to the bottom here. Is over 3/4 of the assets in that account. We're receiving a 4% or greater return on our investment. And also that these top quarter or less investments are all set to mature in the spring of 2025. So these will fall off, and these are fairly low rates of return, 1% and 2%, and we will either be reinvested, or we'll use those to fund our future projects. So by the end of the spring of 2025, the majority of all these rates will be, we anticipate to be at least 4%, which will bring up our rate of return even higher. So as of July 31st, 2024, OPD had a total of 18,575 customers. Down towards the bottom are ratios that we use in our planning and to determine the financial health of the district. We have our modified debt service coverage ratio, which is 2.58. Our equity as a percentage of assets, 66.9. And our times interest earned ratio of 4.8. We received a total of 42 connection fees in July, valued at $44,243. In our current billing arrangements for July, where we currently are at, we added 61 new residential billing arrangements valued at $15,509. If you look at June, that increased also by 65. As compared with May, there were only 31. And those values on the right, the 15,000 and the 10,000, quite a bit more in total amount in our billing arrangements. OPD tries to do everything that we can to keep power on for people that are struggling and having the misfortune not being able to pay their bills. And so we're working and doing all we can to try to keep power on for them. And that's why these customers have increased in these billing arrangements. Power bills have gone up, and during the month of June and July.
So I assume most people that are doing these billing arrangements are people that don't levelize their bill. They are just paying the higher summer rate. Do we give that kind of advice? Do we say, hey, if you levelize your bill?
So if I could interrupt Jonathan here, I believe it was last week we had a disconnect day. Was it last week or the week before? Last week. I walked up to the front desk to talk to the ladies up front, and it just so happened I was in Mesquite and in Overton, and the ladies in both valleys were calling people and talking to them about, you know, being behind, and they were working with them, and I was amazed at how patiently and how well they worked with people to try and find a solution and to work with them to get them through this thing. Now, on the other side, I'm sure it's hard, but I really appreciate Christy and her staff making every effort to work with people and get them through the summer. So they've done a very good job. I was really impressed as I listened to them talk.
The only other issue we have is that tenants cannot go unlevelized because it creates an arrearage that their security deposit doesn't cover when they leave.
How often do we have to write off? I assume sometimes people never can pay it. Is there like a point where we have to write it off?
We reach a point, but our write-offs are pretty minimal. It's typically when we work with people right till they run away. So they do a great job.
Good.
Anything to add there, Christy?
Well, we do have lien rights, and so if the home hasn't sold and a balance is left over, we're able to collect before a sale in that regard. And also because the power bill stays with the property, if an owner has a tenant skip out, the owner becomes responsible for that bill. Upping the security deposit has helped a lot in recouping those costs. Some of the summer bills, it's not quite covering, but we're very careful in the arrangements we make and how far we let them push out so that we're not also creating a bad debt problem.
Excellent.
And we can look into how much we are writing off. I think last year it may have been around $2,000 or $3,000.
It's incredibly low.
And I think that was from the last 2 years maybe, been pretty similar.
When we would submit our year-end financials for 3 years in a row, CFC reached out to us believing that we had a typo because our write-offs were so low.
That's great. Good job.
All right, all great questions. The Roundup program in both colleges continues to grow. Just need to, I guess, when we submit those checks, just need to cash them, I guess.
Yeah, need to cash them.
Just give it all the more out for their
cash. We're going to get a hold of them,
Rich. Can't believe Rich would say that.
So here's the breakdown of our loans with CFC, which we hold exclusively. Our total loan outstanding balance is $48,615,000. Our last quarterly payment was made on time and paid in full in June, in the amount of $1,423,000. Our average interest rate on these loans with our discounts is 3.23%, and we will be addressing the repricing loan, loan number 7 right here, in just a few minutes.
One thing to note of there is, of course, the interest rates we're paying is 3.23. The interest rate we're making is 4.6 and change. That was the wisdom of getting these loans early. before the rates went up.
Yes.
For an attorney, you're all right.
Finance grad.
So here is the detail of our revenue by customer class. Down towards the bottom, we've enlarged it on the next slide here. These are our totals. So for the month of July, down towards the bottom, and light blue, our monthly cost, kilowatt hour cost, is 4.98 cents. Our monthly revenue was 9.99 cents, which brings our 2024 average cost a couple of hours, 4.96 cents.
What did the revenue dip?
That's a great question. We were looking into that and trying to see why. So if you look at April, it's actually going down May, June, and July. Mm-hmm. And we're actually looking into what exactly is causing that. Because our revenue, our total revenue is increasing. Mm-hmm. Like if you look on... if you can see the highlighted yellow, it is the, which one is it, 12?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so if you look at line 12, the bottom highlighted one, each month the revenue is increasing, and our kilowatt hour is increasing also. As I looked into it, I believe that, so we have the base charge, and then we have the first tier, well, I was just looking at the residential rate, but the first tier of the residential rate is, I think it's 0.066 cents or 0.062, right around there. And so if you take the first 500 kilowatts and you take the base charge plus the first 500, that actually ends up being close to like 14 cents a kilowatt hour. And then after that, you go to the next tier of 8.87 tier. This was a residential one that I was looking at. It seems like the more kilowatt hours that we charge, the lower that goes up to a certain point. So there's a area where, because the first, I don't know if I'm explaining it very well, but it's kind of like because we have the base charge, it's like those first 500 kilowatt hours are basically like 14 cents a kilowatt hour is what we're charging. And then the next is 8 cents, and so then it takes the average between those two.
So it gets spread thinner is kind of the way that it...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if we do less, we're generating less revenue, but the margins aren't as high.
So I'm guessing, too, that one of the things that we're going to see that contributes to this as we investigate this a little more is during the summertime, it's been hot everywhere. And you have all the entities that rely on hydropower. Well, the federal entities aren't, because of the drought, they're not able to supply all the hydropower that they promised. And so they're going out on the open market and filling the gaps, and it's driving the cost of the hydropower up, which, you know, our costs go up and our revenue goes down a little bit as compared to the other months earlier in the year. So that's been a problem in the past.
But if we go out of bandwidth and there's additional charges, what will they show up in the month that they're billed to us, or will it come back to July? Or
quarterly. Quarterly.
Quarterly.
Oh, so it shows up on the whatever month that quarter ends.
Mm-hmm. Our next contract, though, will be monthly, starting in January.
Oh, yeah, that's not necessarily good, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to see that monthly cost go up substantially come January. So let's make all the margins till then again.
Hallelujah.
Any other questions playing that slide or other ones? Okay, that concludes my presentation, unless there are any questions related to any other parts of my presentation.
Thank you, John.
I may be on the wrong meeting, but is this the OPD, Overton Power District meeting?
Yeah. You found
it.
Well, I've been sitting online waiting for somebody to invite me in on the video. Yeah.
So we're Steven's going to try and bring you up right now. He checked earlier, okay, and we didn't see you there.
Go ahead. Well, I've been here for a few minutes. Let's put it that way. Around 7. But anyway, okay.
Go ahead and try now.
Okay, hold on. Let me get the picture frame up. There we go. I'm logging now. Your name, my camera. Okay. Ask to join. Asking to be let in. I see my picture.
Somebody does.
I don't see any join requests pop up.
Is he on the wrong link?
Hmm.
He's on Valley Electrics.
No, I got a nice picture of myself.
Yeah, there's no request that came through.
What?
Can you hear us now?
I can hear you. How about sending me an email with the information again so I can try to log on, because I can't tell it's you. All of the phone numbers would.
Yeah, it was M.K. Young right there. Right below me, Lisa.
Let's see if we can do this quickly.
When I have to do this and I'm struggling, I call and say, Stephen, can you remote into my computer and connect me to the computer? And he does. He does.
Well, why don't you guys go on and I'll listen in, and then hopefully we can get this connected.
Mike, can you give us an update on Cheryl?
Yeah, she broke her femur. Up near the joint, near the hip, and they said that it's better to put in an artificial hip to change her hip out. And so they're going to do that tomorrow morning. And then, and they said that that's a lot easier for her than get, you know, because the bone repair takes a long time. Where the hip replacement, they just glue it in. And so you have to do some rehab, but it's not near what it would be if they tried to wait for the bone to heal.
Thank you.
Okay, Mike, you should have an email
and send them to
with
mail.
The link.
With
every
the
time
video
I call
link.
Something.
Oh.
Okay, let me just see if I can.
She was coming down the stairs.
Oh, we're in your spam box.
Huh. Did you send it to M. Young or M.K. Young?
M.K. Young.
M.K.? Okay, let me go and see if I can find it.
Okay. Will it?
You're looking at
your screen. Yeah.
Does it block us completely?
Okay.
Church is bad. Once I approve, you will receive the original message.
Who's it coming from, Stephen?
Yeah. Yeah.
Mike.
Esprit?
No. And that would be the same amount.
Okay, I got the August board meeting. Let's see what we got up front here.
Is it coming from Mesquite?
Okay, cheers. I know I got one from, I got a message from Becky, but I don't have anything else.
Your email's blocking me.
Oh, wait a minute. Mesquite Conference. Okay, yeah, I got it. All right, here, hold on. And is it link mobile phone number?
So click on the video link.
All right. Board meeting, video link, Bill. Okay, let's see what we get. Camera starting, your name, Mike Young. You join when someone lets you in. Okay. Doesn't get you, huh?
No, it doesn't.
Huh. All right, go on with the meeting, I guess.
Let's go on.
Nothing we can do.
He can hear us. We can hear him. We just can't see his pretty face, so here we go. Okay, our next item H, review and possible approval of revisions of the 2024 organizational chart for possible action.
Okay, Stephen, you want to bring up the org chart that I sent out with the action item?
This one?
Right on there. Very good. So I sent this out with the action item last week. And since this has been sent out, there have been a few changes made to this. And I just wanted you to see that this is where we're at. We've added a yellow box on here. And I've also put together some different scenarios. So, I've heard back from a couple of people about some things they would like to see. Mike, is there anything you want to talk about here?
Well, one of the things that I thought was real important was for our assistant to get line experience, because she's been working, I know, with you for a long time and getting outside, going to meetings and all that sort of stuff. But it's also an important part of this kind of management that you would is to work with the individual line organizations. And luckily we have five groups, and I thought it'd be a heck of a good idea to have her take over one group a month with you to help her too, and work with the people and get to know them a little bit. And then you concentrate in that area, and then you move on to the next one in another month, so that over up to around the first of the year, you've had the experience working with each of the groups with your mentorship involved every step of the way, and invites, because the general manager, after working with these people for a few years, you probably know some of the issues that come up and some of the important things and some of the faults. And I thought that would be real important. Okay?
Yeah, very good. So, Stephen, let's bring up the next org chart. This is the one with the proposed with no names. So, you know, we had talked a little bit about this back months ago about doing this. So I had this prepared here. So I'm going to work off this org chart as long as you guys are comfortable with this. But I wanted to point out a couple of things, and that is, of course we've had Corey retire, so this became open and we filled that position. And when we filled that position, this one came open and we filled that position. And so now we have an open journeyman lineman position here. And also we've added an accounting supervisor position right over here. That's new to the chart. And then I show Melissa having the line operations manager
report directly to her. Now, just to give you a little flavor here, I think our training has been going really well together. And I kind of think we're at the point, and I told Melissa this, I think we're to the point that, you know, where she doesn't know what she doesn't know. You know, we've gone over the basic stuff. She really needs to have experience in the, you know, the daily happenings of what goes on in the line department. And so I think that, you know, my ultimate plan was to continue to train Melissa. She's been doing training in accounting, and we were going to start focusing on continued training. And my goal was at the end of December to have her be able to take over things, and I would just act as a mentor. And I think that this leads us to that position, because if she takes over line operations, it gives her time to work with that. And by the time we go with the other departments each month, by the time we get to January, we're right to where I plan to be anyway.
I don't think we need to spend a month on the financial services. She's
no.
been over that department yeah. for years.
Yeah.
So I think let's concentrate on those areas.
So we would do this one. If you guys like this concept, we would do this immediately. October, substations. November, engineering. December, admin. We won't spend any special time on financial, because, like you say, I hope she's got that by now.
I feel like I do. I feel like I do.
Well, you don't have it by now. It's gonna, you know, well, I'm confident that you have it.
Thanks, Richard.
But let's put it in the areas where you feel like you have weaknesses, and let's spend that time.
So I've talked to our new line operations manager to see how he would feel about that, and, you know, if that was a workable solution, and he felt good about that, and if you feel good about that, I think that's the direction that we want to go. Now, like I say, we're advertising for a groundman position and a substation position, because we've had people that have retired. We're adding the accounting supervisor position because also in this, I want to get Melissa out of the financial services manager role and be more focused on these things here. So that is the aim behind this. Any questions about that, or do you?
So is like line operations basically going to be training you how to do their job? I mean, kind of in a nutshell.
So what they're going to do is when I'm in my office, for example, getting ready for board meeting, I have a constant stream of people who come in to ask me questions. Hey, we need to do this, or we need to do that. What I want to do is I'll have those people go to Melissa, and she'll talk through those issues with them, so she gets an idea of what's going on in the department, what the needs are, and it gives her an opportunity to ask questions that if she needs to find out how they do things, that she can ask them that.
And you'll focus on one of those departments every month.
She'll focus on this one for a month and a half. She won't have it all, but then we'll add something else to her plate, and she won't have it all, and we'll just keep adding stuff to her plate.
So not one a month, but just adding to
just
her.
Just adding
starts
every
with
month.
One, then two, then three.
That makes sense.
How do you feel about that?
I love it.
You good with it? You don't think it's putting it all on you too fast?
No.
Okay.
I say our training has gone pretty well, you know, and all the things that were on my list, you know, we've gone on outages together, we've gone through different scenarios, we've visited substations, we've gone through lines, we've gone through engineering. You know, I've passed on a lot of the things that I look at, a lot of the, you know, the quick measures that I look for, those types of things. We've gone through a lot of those. Okay. Are there any questions about anything else here before I go? You're okay with the creating the accounting supervisor?
Yeah.
We used to have a supervisor in this department over billing, but you can see there's only two billing people. So we plan on eventually filling the lead billing clerk, but we needed a supervisor to manage this department so we could take Melissa out of that.
So will that go away once we fill a financial services manager, once Melissa's gone? She's out of that, but will they add accounting supervisor, then we'll have a financial services manager?
Yeah, this will remain vacant for a while.
Yeah.
Probably till I retire at least.
So once that happens, so say in a year, year and a half, 2 years, is the accounting supervisor likely to move up into financial services? And then will accounting supervisor go away, or is it going to be, it just seems like that's almost redundant.
So
looking at the chart.
So we hope that accounting supervisor turns into services manager. And from our talk, at least in the short term, we don't think we need to fill the supervisor position after that person's moved up. Long term, maybe.
Sure.
Is that fair?
Yes.
Okay. That's what you're asking. I like it.
Okay. While we're here, I wanted to just give you a little bit of rundown on what we see for manpower needs going forward. I've met with Kyle. I'm Mr. Levitt, excuse me.
It's fine.
So we've talked about needs in the line operations. He feels like that we're at a pretty good spot the near term once we do some hiring here, the one person to fill at the bottom. Next year, Randall and Kyle have worked on bringing in a contractor to help us with some of the maintenance and other things like that. So we feel like for the next few years, we're pretty good in this position. Any change of thoughts, Kyle or Randall? Are we still on track for that? SevOps, we're going to fill this position here, I think, over the next little while. This department has the greatest prospect for change, and let me tell you why. If we get those big loads that come into our area, two things are going to happen to us. First, we're going to get a lot more equipment, and second, we are going to be back in the FERC, NERC, WEC umbrella again, and we're going to need to hire people to work in compliance. And we're also probably going to have to look at running a more robust operations center 24/7. So you're looking, if those two things happen, you're looking at hiring 4 or 5 people right here. And in the short term, if that doesn't happen, we still probably need to add another person here over the next year or two. Same with Randall's department, he's pretty good. But we think that we need to add another person over the next.
We just have a retirement.
Well, we have a retirement, but we also thought maybe one more person eventually. Admin, pretty good spot. One of the things that we looked at where we, you know, have a lot of shortages is one is customer service. One solution to customer service problem would be instead of doing 4-10s 5 days a week, we would just go to a flat 4-10s if the board was acceptable to that, and then we wouldn't have to hire anybody. So that's an option we could fill all of our needs without having to hire somebody. Long-term, Scott thought we might need another person in IT. And let me give you an example of why that's needed. We had Mr. Rust, who talked about the being caught at the airport because of the software updates and that shut down all the airlines. We get a lot of information. Scott showed you what we get from EISAC. We get updates from different software providers. We have these two guys running right now to keep things, databases and everything going. Eventually, we're going to need somebody who can review all of the data that comes in and make sure that our updates are done timely and that they work effectively and test all of those things. So that's going to be a need. And then I think we're in pretty good shape in accounting other than the changes that we might do there. So one of my goals was to lay out a plan as to what we need for manpower over the next few years, and that's what I see to get us fully staffed, as that's where we would go to. Any questions about any of that?
It's kind of a domino effect, but if you had 5 or 6 more people, how are you for office space?
Cramped, very cramped. We've discussed that, and we would have to really look at, you know, we've talked about the land up here on the bench above Mesquite, about getting some BLM land up there where we could put a substation, a warehouse. We might have to move some crew and also some substation people up there so that they're not in the office. We're still going to be cramped in some ways, depending on where we run that operation center. Probably the least favorable option is to add another building in Overton. Or, I kind of joke with the guys, or, you know, we kind of have the same problem here. What do? Start building up, you know, start building skyscrapers? I don't know.
Put an office in Bunkerville,
huh? Come to Bunkerville, would love it.
You say that, but you don't mean it.
We actually looked at that, but you guys really love your land and find that it's worth a lot in Bunkerville.
I do like the idea. I mean, this is where the meters are. It seems like this is where we want to minimize travel back and forth.
Yeah,
that's like response time. There's just like a whole lot of reasons to grow where the meters are.
Yeah, exactly.
I kind of like across the river over there because we can get BLM land, and this is the area where you look in 20 years from now. The ski goes from 25,000 to 50,000 people. This is where the warehouse site's needed. Right now, our warehouse here is crammed. Get a site out there that we have enough room to grow.
We don't want to sleep on what might happen in Moapa, too.
That's true. But Overton is much closer to Moapa, and we have 20 acres in Overton.
Yeah.
You know, for yard wise.
Yeah.
There. And we do have some facilities up there, and we always have the ability for more BLM ground up outside of Tortoise, wouldn't we?
Yeah, but there's a lot of demands on that right now. You know, if we grow up there, we're going to have to maybe put in more ring bus. If we look at some generation, right now we have the site designated for that, and we can't even do both of those on the same acreage that we have, so.
So right now, though, in the Virgin Valley, this area, there's not really a good place to grow.
No, there isn't. Other than on the bench over there, that's really not in Mesquite. But
is that in Arizona? Like,
no, Arizona? It'd be in Nevada. I guess it would probably be considered Bunkerville.
It is Bunkerville.
Side of the bridge, but
just pretty close there by Fox. Or,
yeah, exactly. Okay.
Well, we might be looking at that, probably aggressively, whether it's over here or over there. But.
We've got our crack engineering team and surveyor working on that, so. Right?
We are working on it,
That's right. Okay, very good.
It depends what happens over in Moapa, that could be significant.
Yeah. And if we have to put generation in Moapa, you know, we might have to look at doing some office space and some generation there as well, so. That's kind of a wild card at this point.
In your discussions with Nevada Power, is the gas-fired generation still not an option at the recharger site?
So they were real interested in partnering with us on a site that is not at Reed Gardner.
Okay.
It's still controversial to put it at Reed Gardner, but if we could put it over by Tortoise or somewhere else in Moapa, they were very interested in that.
They already have the tap.
And so, you know, not to go into too much detail, but it would be a question of, do we use their tap and put the line over from there, or do we re-tap the line? That's the question that we would have to figure out an answer to.
Hidden Valley Dairy.
Hidden Valley Dairy has already been sold. It's already been sold. So that's my run through, again, seeking approval to approve this and this on the org chart, and then just some additional information. Mike, did I address your concerns okay? I know you couldn't see this.
Is there any proof, like, answer somebody going in?
I know you did. That sounded great. That's really what I had in mind.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Well, I'll move to approve it.
Okay, we have a motion to approve the revisions to the 2024 organizational chart with associated adjustments and additions as presented. I heard a second.
Mike, that was your motion, correct?
Yes.
That's what I heard him say.
Okay, that's what I thought.
And we have Bob as the second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Aye. All righty. It's approved.
Mendes, you did mention some that were not on the chart, so the motion might have included some shadows.
Well, that was a peek into the future, and when we actually want to add those, we'll come back and tell you what we want to add. I didn't want to add a bunch of stuff that were shadows and then fill those later. I want you guys to be on board with what we're doing.
This is what is pertinent to us now.
That's correct. That's correct.
Okay. Okay. Review and possible approval of the repricing or paying off of Cooperative Finance Corporation, CFC's loan number 9000007 for possible action.
So as Jonathan reported to you guys earlier tonight, we have a loan number 7 that is available for repricing. I asked Jonathan to do a cost-benefit analysis for us on paying it off, on repricing it, or looking at additional options. And so I'm going to ask Jonathan to give you a presentation on his analysis and then his recommendation for you guys.
All right, I'm going to come up here to the front here. So this is our cost-benefit analysis for, we're going to call it loan number 7 with CFC. So again, this is from our, this is from the financial presentation. All of the loans out with CFC, $48,615,000. This loan right here, loan number 7, represents 3% of the total value of the loans outstanding. Current rate, 3.71%. The due date for repricing, October 1st. Effective rate, 3.26%. So we bring that up again, the our modified debt service coverage ratio and also our equity to, or our percentage of equity to assets amount, those grant us these discounts with CFC and also with being an exclusive lender. And so this loan will mature in September of 2028, so it's going to be a 4-year loan. So here the amount right here balances $1,478,000. But we have a quarterly payment due in September, so the actual amount that will be repriced will be the $1,397,000. So that's where a snapshot of all of our loans there. So what type of interest rate environment are we in right now? Well, currently the federal funds rate is at a target range between 5.25 and 5.5, and that rate has remained unchanged since July of 2023. So they haven't made any changes since then. However, the Federal Reserve is expected to cut interest rates by 25 basis points in their next scheduled meetings for the rest of 2024. So in September, November, and December, it's anticipated that they'll reduce the rate by 25 basis points in each of those meetings, bringing the effective rate the federal funds target rate down from 5.5 to 4.75. And then further in 2025.
Got it for one question.
Yes.
But we have to reprice on October 1st.
Yes.
So we're probably, if they do that, we'd only see a quarter point.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So this is the only one that we are actually hopeful or concerned about is the September one. Thank you. And So, yes, and then in 2025, another 25 basis points for each quarter. So, like Mr. Jones brought up, this is the only one that will be, that could possibly affect our quoted rate from CFC. So, CFC gives us a quoted rate. So currently when this loan became available to reprice, it was July 1st, and they gave us a rate of 6.1%. So if we look here, right here, these are our two scenarios right here. A week ago, they gave us a rate, they quoted a rate at 5.5%. And then that's when I prepared this presentation. And then yesterday, we were quoted a rate at 5.56%. So it actually went up a little bit from last week. And this is our effective rate with our discounts. So 5.5% was last week. This is what we're anticipating or hoping, that after the feds lower their rates, that we should get a little reduction in our rate. There's nothing guaranteed there, but we're looking at hopefully a 5.25% rate on our loan. So what this right here, what we're basically, the two options that we have for this loan is, one, are we going to reprice it with the quota rate that they give us, or are we going to pay it off? And if we reprice it, we will go with the new loan, and this principal that we have outstanding, that amount is invested in our Morton asset account. So if we pay off the loan, then we will take those funds out of our Morton asset account and pay off the loan. So those are the two options that we're looking at, to reprice it and keep the funds in our Morton account, or to remove the funds from our Morton account and pay it off. We don't have the margins at this point to pay it off outright, or we would look at that option also.
Is that going to come out of Saks?
Right now, our Saks is only $600,000.
Oh, right.
We move them back and around, but it would come out of one of
those. Some of these loans that are coming off, which are low, they would reprice high.
Yeah.
So I guess, Jonathan, the question is how much is it going to cost us at the 4.8 interest, and what the value is to keep it? How much are we making on interest?
Right.
What's our better deal?
Right. Great question. So at the 4.8 effective interest over the course of the loan, 4 years, we will pay a total of $146,000 in interest expense. And so down here we have these two different models. So if we take this 4.8%, if we get a 5% return on our money in our Morton account, we will potentially earn $308,000. If we subtract the $146,000 in interest expense, and we're looking at net earnings of $161,000. And there's our total future cash value there. So that's if we leave it in, our net earnings would be this right here. If we got an average of 4% on the return, or a 4% return on our investment, then less than our interest income, $242,000, and we're looking at almost $100,000 in net earnings. So those were the two that I'm displaying here. Can we get 5% and 4%? Here's our Morton, our assets in our Morton account, and I've sorted these by our settle date. So these are the oldest ones that we have invested in. And this slide is this table is three slides long. So if we go in here in 2024. So the most recent security that we bought, and these are actually CDs, it was, the term was 2 years, or actually 3 years, but we received a 4.85% return. And then these are all in June, 4.5, 4.5, so low fours, or low fives, high fours for all of 2024. So we feel pretty confident or optimistic that we should be able to get one of these rates similar to this locked in for 3 or 4 years.
Those anticipated interest rates for the new loan, that had all of our discounts and everything in it, or did that all of our
discounts. So this is actually, we were quoted 5.5%. The most recent one is actually 5.56. We're thinking that with the reduction in the Fed rate, be 5.25, and so the effective rate would be 4.8. So these are actually, so this interest expense is based off of 4.8, not the 5.25.
Does that answer? What staff's recommending?
So?
1.5 million on it.
So if we remove the funds from Morton and pay it off, then we potentially are walking away from anywhere from 87,000, 170.
No, 161, you're only making about $5,000. The 87, you're losing $80,000.
Well, no, that's the difference. Go back.
So this is, these are the net earnings. Yeah,
that's not possible. If your interest rate of your loan is higher than what we're going to earn from the interest, then it can't be a positive. It's going to be a negative, right?
Well,
so you're saying potential invest is at 4%, for example.
This is at 4%, yes.
Right, so but our loan is at 4.8. That means...
No, you have those backwards. You have those backwards.
Yeah, 4.8 would be the loan. So this, yes, is lower than what the loan is, but this is compounding interest, and we're starting with a lump sum of this, and so that compounds to this with the loan, what we're paying off, the interest expense. Right here, we're reducing it every quarterly payment that we make. Okay. So if the so these are the net earnings. If obviously if you just had the money outright and didn't have the interest expense, you would be better off. You wouldn't have the interest expense in there at all.
And then as you pay the loan off, there's less interest expense.
We're in the final 4 years of that loan.
As it gets smaller and smaller.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, these here would be the net earnings. And so on the low side, we're anticipating 87,000. And then the high side, the 161,000. And that's what we have displayed here. So.
But are we going to invest out 4 years though? So in 2 years, if interest rates go to 0.5 again, then there is a possibility that we won't do well.
Right. So we could, this one here is a 3 year. These are 2 years. So we can lock that rate in for
24.
Yeah.
And I believe it's been 2 years ago when we originally signed with Morton, you guys capped that at 18 to 24 months. And then we came back to you guys and you extended that and gave us the ability to invest out to 48 months on our policy. So we do have between 36 and 48 months that we can invest on some of those. And we time that with our liquidity needs with Randall, which Jonathan spoke about in his financial presentation. We're looking at those liquidity needs, and as some of those shorter terms are ready to mature, we're not reinvesting those because we know we need that cash in the next coming 3 months.
Do in 4 years, during that time, do we need all that money? Like, if we pay it off, are we going to be borrowing again?
In 4 years? Yes, sir.
We're going to talk about capital projects over the next couple of months, and we've got a lot of stuff on the books.
But you hear how passionate Kevin is about it. Read him your recommendation, Jonathan.
Okay. So our recommendation is that we reprice the 48-month loan for $1,397,000 with CFC with the best available rate prior to October 1st, 2024.
You want us to put in that motion that somebody has...
Jonathan?
We're going to use somebody's best judgment on when to do that?
Yes.
Okay, Okay, I'll make a motion that we follow staff's recommendation and we give you the power to reprice that one. Feel it's the best time.
Before October 1st. It has to be off before October 1st.
I would second that.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the repricing of CFC loan number 7 before October 1st, 2024, as presented, giving you the power to reprice it. Or Jonathan.
Jonathan.
Together, you can push the bus. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Nay. I have one more comment I want to make about this. Just a thought. In some ways, I feel like we're delving into financial, not planners.
Speculation?
We're using company money to gamble with the markets.
Well, if we lock it in, it's not gambling.
Right. So that's kind of why, if we need the money, and it looks, we're forecasting that it's the best, it's going to work out, I feel good about that. If we're doing it gambling.
CDs that are maturity that can cover capital investments?
Well, that's kind of a loaded question because we have capital investments of about $80 million. We don't have enough CDs to do that.
No.
Right now we have the investments to cover the projects that we want to do for next year and into the following year. But after that point, we're going to have to look at some more borrowing to be able to complete the projects.
So you are looking at 4 years.
We're looking at 10 years.
We're looking at our capital project needs for the next 10 years, but we're looking at borrowing about 4.
Okay.
I didn't get Mike's vote on that.
Mike?
Mike, are you still there?
Yes, I am. I'm undecided, so I'm going to abstain.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
And Dale, you were a name for it.
I'm opposed, only because I'm ignorant.
Okay. I'm not going to put that in a minute. Thank you very much. So, 5-1-1. Okay, thank you.
I would need more time.
Okay. Item J, public comments. Having no public comments, or any board comments? No board comments. Okay. Take a break. We're going to go into executive session.
We need to approve our next meeting date.
Yeah.
We have to do that before?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Or you do, don't you? Okay, do I hear a motion for approval of our next meeting date?
So moved. For the 18th.
Okay. Do I hear a second?
I'll second that.
Second.
I got almost.
It's been moved and seconded for the next meeting be September 18th at 3 p.m. in Overton. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Mike?
He said aye.
Did he? Okay.
Okay. Now we're going to take a break for 5 minutes and then go into executive session.
Chad, before you can take a break,